Hello, this is Ian Harper welcoming you to Business of Weather podcast, produced in association with Intermet Digital, the online portal dedicated to extreme weather and climate change, flooding and poor air quality. In each episode, we'll investigate the increasing impact of extreme weather and climate change on business and society, and how weather technology and information services can address the growing challenges. The aim is to spotlight the opportunities for entrepreneurs, startups, and investors to develop the business potential of assisting weather-affected enterprises. Money is without doubt a powerful influence on how companies respond to the challenges of climate change. According to the global investor network, Divest Invest, at the end of May 2021, over 1,300 organisations and 58,000 individuals representing investments worth over $14 trillion had committed either to invest out of companies considered to contribute to climate change or to invest into companies offering climate solutions such as renewable energy, sustainable agriculture, and water efficiency. The growing view of many investors, it seems, large and small, is that investments in companies considered to contribute to climate change are a bad risk. The good risks are those offering climate solutions. As a result, investors are adopting an increasingly muscular approach to their dealings with environmentally damaging companies. Act quickly and meaningfully to reduce your climate impact, or we will sell your shares. In this episode of Business of Weather, we speak to Suzanne Keane, Senior Portfolio Manager at the French fund management giant Amundi. Amundi has over 1.7 trillion euros of institutional and retail funds under management, making it one of the world's top 10 investment managers. Suzanne Keane, welcome to Business of Weather.
Thank you, Ian. Thank you for having me on your program. It's a delight to be here.
Now, tell me about Amundi, Suzanne, the assets you've under management, how your clients and assets are split between institutional and retail investors.
Sure. Well, you know, as you may know, Amundi is Europe's largest asset manager, I should say. It's in the top 10 globally. It's got around 1.7 trillion assets under management. And our clients span, as you say, both retail and institutional. I think we've 100 million clients overall. And we've a complete range of savings and investment solutions, both in the active and in the passive space. And I suppose when I look at Amundi at a global level, we've operations spanning 40 countries, but it's also one of the largest asset managers locally here in Ireland with about 350 staff. And Amundi has been present in the country for 22 years. I'm here for nearly 10 years myself. And Dublin is also the main hub for Amundi's equities business, which is the team that I work in. And if I look at Amundi Ireland overall, it manages around 43 billion across different asset classes and strategies. And looking beyond, sorry if I could just say, Ian, looking beyond the equities business at Amundi, we also are growing in a number of different areas at Amundi in Ireland. We have launched a retail business for the Irish market last year, and there's 1 billion AUM there. And in doing that, we teamed up with Irish Life, which is Ireland's largest life insurance company, as your listeners know, I'm sure. And we teamed up as their responsible investing partner. So in total, we have 7 funds on Irish Life's platform, including 2 of our flagship ESG funds. Dublin is also a key technology hub for the group alongside Paris. Just to kind of give you a sense of how busy we are at Amundi, we also have been authorized recently as a super management company, which Supermanco, as they're known, means that Amundi can act as a management company for third party fund managers in Ireland, as well as launching our own Irish domiciled funds. So as you can imagine, it's a very busy and exciting place to be here.
Well, that sets the scene nicely, thank you. Now, let's just move on. Now, speaking generally, how does climate change impact investment management and portfolio planning?
That's an increasingly topical issue, and the answer is that it has a large and growing impact on our investment decisions and the type of stocks that we consider to be good investments. So issues such as climate change and sustainability more broadly are at the heart of our investment decisions. And it's not just from a pure sustainability perspective, but also in terms of expected financial return. So this makes complete sense from my view when you consider the wave of regulation which is facing companies and incentivizing them to be more sustainable, you know, in their approach to energy, such as renewable energy over fossil fuels, and also to penalize the less sustainable companies. But we're also seeing that consumers more than ever are looking to brands that share their ESG values. And if companies disappoint on ESG factors, whether it be damage to local environments for an energy company or poor working conditions for a clothing retail, it can really hurt the share price when it hits the headlines.
Right, tell me now, what do you believe is the number one risk to your clients posed by climate change?
The impact of climate change is immense, and it affects every part of our lives. So from a purely human perspective, we're all massively exposed to the risks from climate change in our daily lives. So whether that's the risk of flooding to our homes from extreme weather, or the impact of air quality from industrialization. And then obviously more recently, there's been the link between deforestation, for example, and disease transmission. But when I look at climate change from an investor's point of view, there's clearly also massive potential to lose money from investing in companies that are not proactive in terms of moving to a more sustainable world. And I think of energy players that are continuing to invest in fossil fuel-based generation. And these may well turn out to be stranded assets down the road. But I think it's important that, you know, we identify companies that are not merely just doing the minimum in terms of not causing a negative impact, but also are looking to do to generate a net positive impact where possible, rather than just getting to net zero. And I think that'll increasingly be what investors and consumers are focused on. So I look at companies that are taking positive moves, such as reforestation and proactive steps to encourage biodiversity, or innovative farming practices, for example. So you know chemical companies that are producing feed ingredients that reduce methane emissions from cows, for example, and also innovative companies in the alternative energy space, such as green hydrogen or renewable diesel. So we're looking for companies that are a positive contributor, not merely reducing their negative impact. And I think another interesting point to mention is that, you know, we're all very mindful that, you know, the impact on climate is very much something that we felt more by the next generation, maybe more than ourselves. So I think this is something that Mark Carney, the former governor of the Bank of England, referred to as the tragedy of the horizon. So when it comes to climate change, you know, we need to align our time horizon as investors, which can often be too short. So we need to align it to the generations that are coming behind us, who will have to live on the planet long after we're gone. And I think COVID-19 has only increased this focus on sustainability, and you know, the market turmoil has really kind of, I think, accelerated people's focus on integrating ESG criteria into their investment process. I think it's really been a catalyst for growth for sustainable investing.
Thanks for that. Now, I'd just like to pick up on this issue of stranded assets, that is, assets which a company might have, such as oil reserves, which it cannot extract or sell because of their impact on the climate. Now, are stranded assets a significant concern to Amundi in the coming years? Do you think there are elements of your portfolios which could potentially become stranded?
Generally, you know, it can be difficult to predict where regulation is ultimately headed, but I do think it's better to be invested in companies that are on the right side of climate change. And certainly, I do think there's a significant risk of stranded assets for fossil fuel generation in the years ahead. And I can see that they will be likely left behind, as, you know, grid investment is more focused on building out the infrastructure to support electrical vehicle charging, for example, and renewable generation, rather than connecting fossil fuel assets. And also you've got the likelihood of more interconnectors across Europe to hook up this renewable generation to make sure that we have energy stability at all times of the day. So I think fossil fuel generation in general is very much at risk of being a stranded asset in the years ahead. But when we consider ourselves as fund managers, we can make our predictions and we use our influence with companies to try to get them to address these physical risks. But of course, our primary role is to provide clients with portfolios that are resilient, as resilient as possible, and as protected as possible to sustainability headwinds, such as the risk of stranded assets, and positioning our portfolios more favourably in companies that are being innovative and proactive in addressing sustainability issues.
Thank you. Some interesting points. Now, I'll come to engagement in a couple of minutes, but Looking specifically at Amundi, tell me about your investment strategy and how and to what extent it takes account of such factors as climate change.
I'm the lead portfolio manager on European equity ESG improvers, and this is part of a flagship range that we have across assets and geographies, and it's based on a new forward-looking and dynamic way of ESG investing, which was created in Dublin and it's managed from Dublin. So when I look at the ESG space, the best-in-class ESG companies are where everyone is invested, and these companies can be expensive at times, but also subject to large swings in share price, as we've seen in recent days, to be honest, if they disappoint on already high earnings expectations, or if there's a shift in investors' sentiment away from the winner space. But what we aim to do with the ESG improvers is to identify fundamentally attractive companies that are looking to improve their sustainability credentials in a material way. And then we invest in these companies at a relatively early stage in their ESG journey. So what I mean by this is we engage with these companies, we encourage them to take the right steps in terms of their sustainability journey. And these depend on the risks that are most material for them. And it'll vary by sector. For example, it can be affordable housing in the real estate sector. It can be emissions in the utilities and energy sectors. But then when you look at the clothing sector, for example, it could be their supply chain and, you know, how they treat their workforce, how they sustain their raw materials, are their raw materials certified to be sustainable. But when we identify these companies, we then can, you know, when we invest in the company, we engage with the management to help them on their journey. But then we benefit from, as investors, from the financial re-rating these companies enjoy once their ESG improvement becomes more evident to the market as a whole. So I guess what we're looking to do is to identify those companies that we think will be the ESG winners of tomorrow. And there's a lot of research to support this way of investing in companies. We look at external centres of excellence, such as the UNPRI, has identified that strong ESG momentum can really improve risk-adjusted performance. And we've certainly seen it in the performance in recent years. I think Morningstar said that I think something like 2-3 out of 4 of its sustainable equity funds ranked in the top half of their Morningstar categories in 2020. So I think there's a lot of tailwind for being more sustainable in terms of, as I said, regulators, investors, consumers alike are all looking in the same direction.
Business of Weather, spotlighting the business opportunities of extreme weather and climate change. Thank you for that. That was quite interesting. Now, I'd like to turn to engagement, engaging with clients and with the assets you invest in. Now, InfluenceMap, the environmental research group and climate lobbying platform, I think it was in its report, Asset Managers and Climate Change 2021, considered Amundi to be one of the lead engagers on climate and gave you a score A- for climate engagement. So, first of all, how does Amundi engage with its clients, institutional and retail, that is the people whose money you manage and invest, how do you engage with them on the issue of climate change?
I don't know whether I mentioned earlier, but since its creation in 2020, Amundi has considered responsible investing has been at the heart of Amundi and the core of its values. And part of that is engaging with the corporates we invest in exercising our voting rights as shareholders to express our view on management sustainability strategies. And it's a core part of our job being a responsible asset manager. And it doesn't surprise me to hear that Amundi has been mentioned as one of the largest engagers. It's the largest asset manager in Europe. And also our engagement activities are extensive. We have a specialist engagement team in Paris that conducts Amundi's formal engagement activities with corporates. But all of our investment staff, including myself as a portfolio manager or research analysts, we have a regular dialogue with companies that we invest in. And we use those meetings as opportunities to question and encourage management to follow best practice when it comes to sustainability. And two of the key issues that Amundi prioritises in its formal engagement activities are two of the contemporary challenges. So one being the energy transition, which is obviously pivotal, but also social cohesion through the protection of, you know, direct and indirect employees and the promotion of human rights. So I think both of those issues are key pillars of our focus of our engagement with companies that we invest in.
Now, presumably there's a formal arrangement with the clients whose funds you manage, is there? Do you meet with them regularly too to find out what their views are about climate change and how they want to take that situation forwards?
we do meet regularly with the clients who are the ultimate investors in the companies that we are promoting from a sustainability perspective in our funds. And we do listen to their views and take them into account, because they are clearly, it's important that we're considering what is best practice at all times from a sustainability perspective and adapting our process to what is best practice. And one of the things that we're hearing from our clients, and I think that Amundi does very well, is they want us to use our scale and our expertise to influence companies for the better. So to help them on their journey towards becoming the ESG winners of tomorrow. And this is something that we take very seriously in our role at Amundi. I mean, we have the formal engagement activities through the engagement team based in Paris, but every PM and analyst, when they're meeting a company, and we have many opportunities to meet companies over the course of a year, whether it be conferences or direct meetings, both from a sustainability perspective or just in terms of our own financial perspective also, we use that opportunity to ask companies questions on the key material drivers for their sustainability journey. So what are they doing to address the key sustainability risks for their sector? And they vary by sector. And I think it's very important to have that knowledge of the industry to be able to ask the correct questions of companies. For example, there's no point in asking a question to do with renewable generation for a company that, you know, their main risks are more in the, you know, raw material space, or the more risks are maybe more in the ethical space. So I think it's very important to tweak our questions depending on the sector, and to leverage internal expertise, also that of our clients, and also external providers such as the likes of SASB, which are renowned experts in kind of assessing the materiality of ESG risks.
Right, now you mentioned the formal engagement team over in Paris. Now, how tough can they be? How much influence are they prepared to put on companies, the companies you invest in, to get them to reduce their exposure to climate risks? Will they go as far as disinvesting?
Amundi does leverage its scale and its influence, certainly, to try to direct where we invest our capital. And there is a certain number of exclusions at the Amundi level of companies and sectors that we don't invest in. We don't invest in certain weapons companies. We also don't invest in companies that are continuing to promote coal generation, for example. In terms of my own individual strategies, you know, I do look to try and avoid the ESG laggards across different sectors. And that can certainly involve divesting in names that we think are not making enough progress in addressing their ESG risks. For example, since my portfolio launched last year, there was one company in particular that was a luxury goods company, and they weren't making swift enough progress to address their supply chain risks in terms of certifying their raw materials. And this is a company that I divested of my holding because I wasn't happy that they were taking the action that they had indicated to us they would take in terms of being proactive in addressing sustainability issues in their sector. But the risks, as I say, vary by sector across the ES and G spectrum. For example, in a pharmaceutical company, it can be a company with a declining record on product safety recalls, for example, and that could be a catalyst for us to review our position. But certainly Amundi takes its duties in terms of engagement very seriously, and that does and it does include divesting in names or excluding names from our eligible universe that we don't think are acceptable from an ESG perspective.
Interesting you mention a luxury goods company, because we see a situation these days where billionaires are rapidly getting behind the effort to address climate change. Can you say who the luxury goods company is?
No, absolutely not. I think you'll appreciate I don't want to mention specific companies. And I think it is just, I mentioned my decision just to highlight the process, that it is a rigorous ESG process. It's not to say that company is not making progress on sustainability, but what we are looking for is clear, measurable, time-bound action on the key ESG material risks facing their sector. And I need to be proactive in preserving the spirit of my fund and the brand that is ESG Improvers as well, that we don't invest in companies that are not walking the walk in terms of ESG. I mean, it's all very well setting targets for 2050, but you know, that's a long time away. And what we want to see is tangible action that management is delivering on in the coming months and years.
Business of Weather, spotlighting the business opportunities of extreme weather and climate change. I'd like to move on now to the data that you actually need to make your decisions about investment and climate change on. Let's take a look at the information you need to make decisions about the risks posed by climate change to your investment portfolios. First of all, what type of information do you need to assess climate risks?
That's an interesting question, and the amount of information available to us is rising exponentially, and I think it's very important to have a good filter to be able to assess what is useful information. Also, when you look at company disclosures, I mean, the wealth of information being disclosed now by corporates can be mind-boggling at times, and I think it's very important that we can distill what are the most important material pieces of ESG information. And to do that, we leverage on a mix of resources, both internal and external. So when I look externally, we use 7 different data providers, including Sustainalytics, MSCI, and other highly rated companies. In our experience, some of these companies are better at measuring some areas than others. I think having a mix, having a wide range of providers, means we've a more comprehensive data set. And that we also have significant internal teams at Amundi in terms of analysts and researchers who themselves research these companies from a sustainability perspective. And they can highlight anywhere they feel there are discrepancies to our external data. And then using all these internal and external resources, we follow a process where we rate companies on a scale of A to G within their sector. So companies are measured versus peers facing similar sustainability risks within their own sectors. So then we get a view of who are the winners within a sector, who are the companies that we think are improving from an ESG perspective, and then who are the laggards on the material ESG risks facing their sectors. And as I said before, then we look to avoid the laggards and position ourselves as much as possible in the companies that we think are the improvers from a sustainability perspective.
Right. Now, I was going to ask you where you get your information from. You've mentioned 2 pretty big providers, Sustainalytics and MSCI, and you say there are 7 altogether, so I can imagine who the others are. Now, tell me, are there any gaps in the data you get from these companies? Could you do with more data of perhaps a different type or a better quality? Are there any gaps?
Well, I think, to be honest, I think we have a very extensive view of the current available information. I think there are always gaps when you look at individual companies. I think when you move down into the smaller companies, for example, they won't have the same amount of disclosure that you get in the larger companies, which tend to be more proactive on ESG issues. And I suppose they have more resources at their disposal to disclose more data and to be more refined in how they look at ESG. So I think there's definitely a gap when you move down the market cap spectrum. And I think that's something that we've used to supplement ourselves in terms of our own internal resources on ESG. And we have a big analyst team in Paris and Dublin, which is a great help in that regard. I think there's always, sustainability is a very much evolving area. And you can see, post COVID-19, obviously the social aspect of ESG has become more important. And I think, people are considering more health and safety, how workers are being treated, and that came to light during the coronavirus. There was a number of scandals with companies not treating their workers well. And I think the more resources we have, and then also the more alternative data sets we're looking at, the higher the quality of our research will be. So I think things like AI tools down the road, I think that's something that we're looking at to see how we can leverage more of this sort of data, which is something that we also do at Amundi. And I think that's where, that's something that will be increasingly interesting in the years ahead, when you can look at kind of data sets that are not necessarily on the radar of the traditional ESG rating providers, and to be very dynamic in our view on what companies are doing in real time. And I think kind of we can definitely use technology to kind of distill more informed views based on the plethora of information that we have been thrown at us, whether it's press releases or sustainability reports. And I think that's a really exciting area to explore.
Right. Now, data is only as good as the information that it's based on. And of course, its interpretation. So, how do you actually ensure at Amundi that the data you use in respect of climate change related decisions is accurate and reliable?
I'm sure you can imagine, Ian, at Amundi we've a lot of access to a lot of these large corporates. So I mean, first of all, we're relying to a great extent on audited sustainability reports. So these are the public information that that have been audited by the company that they're releasing. We also leverage on kind of certifications and kind of the rubber stamp of approval from external bodies. So whether if in the real estate sector, we'll be looking for evidence that the company has green certifications, for example. example, within their sector. And we'd be looking at that, for instance, in lots of other sectors, such as the clothing sector, where you're looking at certifications from, you know, sustainability groups that have that are focused on that area. So we look for those rubber stamps of approval, or the company's been, you know, proactive in getting these certifications to a kind of rubber stamp their process. And we have our own direct engagement with corporates. So we make sure that we're asking the material questions for these companies within their sectors. So making sure that, you know, obviously our analysts are well trained in knowing what are the material risks that are facing each company within their sector, to make sure that you ask the right questions of management. And I think that is key.
Now, I'd just like to move on to look a little bit more detail at climate change related risks. Now, many people, as you've already said, see that fossil fuels are potentially problematic in a climate-related way. Could be down to stranded assets, etc. But looking at this from the perspective of a major fund manager, what other types of activities do you perceive as problematic or potentially problematic when it comes to assessing climate risks?
I think it's, you know, very true. Obviously, stranded assets are a big risk, but also we're looking at sustainability in a very broad way. You know, whether it's whether it's fossil fuel versus renewable energy, whether it's ESG risks such as biodiversity, which I think is definitely an increased threat to the health of the planet, and also things like water stress and water pollution. So it's very important that, you know, we have a very holistic view on what sustainability is from an environmental perspective, and that we're looking to companies that are a positive contributor, positive provider of solutions, rather than just looking to mitigate emissions. And we're looking at their emissions across scope 1, 2, and 3, across their entire supply chain. So it's not just the emissions that they generate, it's what their products are used for down the road. Do they cause further emissions? And it's also, are they achieving their own sustainability plans in a ESG friendly way? For example, how are they may be expanding their renewable generation in emerging markets, but are they treating their workers well and their local communities well in the construction of these plants, for example, in emerging markets? So I think it's very holistic, it's very broad, and it's evolving. And I think it's not enough to look at what the company is just doing itself. You need to look at its broader impact on the communities in which it operates in.
Right, thank you. Now, I'd just like to turn the spotlight back a little bit on the fossil fuel industry again. About a year or so ago, a US court case brought by the people of the state of New York against ExxonMobil failed to prove that ExxonMobil had fraudulently misled the state of New York about the impact of its activities on climate change. Are you familiar with this case? And do you believe similar actions will be brought by institutional investors against fossil fuel or indeed other companies in the future?
Yeah, I'm sure you'll appreciate that I'm not able to talk about specific companies or litigation, but what I can say is that people are more and more demanding that companies walk the walk when it comes to sustainability, and shareholder activism is high and it's rising. And from our perspective, it's not just about a company saying that it's adhering to a 2050 plan, for example. It's also about having clear, precise, more near-term plans, which will deliver tangible results we can then measure. And I think if not, we won't be in, we don't invest in these companies, or we will reduce our holding, or we will divest altogether. So I definitely think shareholder activism is high, and also, you know, shareholder engagement groups that are, you know, approaching fund managers to put forward motions at companies' AGMs, for example, to vote against if companies are not taking the actions that they expect to be taking from a sustainability perspective. And Amundi is very active in, you know, supporting such initiatives and engaging itself in our own activities. So I think, you know, definitely when we speak to our end clients, they don't want to just know that we avoided investing in companies that are not doing the right thing in terms of sustainability. They want to know what we are doing and trying to influence their sustainability journey. How are we trying to improve the selection? Their sustainability. How are we trying to use our weight of money to accelerate their journey to a more sustainable path? And I think that's increasingly what investors and society alike is looking towards asset managers to provide.
Right, now, one reason companies such as yourselves and pension funds, institutional investors, etc., have invested in oil companies such as the ExxonMobils, the Chevrons, the Shells, BPs, etc., is because of the significant dividends they pay. They need these dividends, of course, to meet their liabilities, such as pension payments over the course of 30, 40 years ahead. Now, if you don't invest in such companies, where can you invest to maintain the dividend levels that you need to meet your clients' need for income?
It's an interesting dilemma that, you know, obviously asset managers and pension providers need the income to support their future payments. But I do think that, you know, our approach to ESG improvers is an inclusive approach. So I think that, you know, rather than the more traditional ESG funds that maybe look to exclude whole sections of the investment universe, I mean, we feel that these companies that, you know, they may not be sustainable right now, but they could be a big part of the solution towards the transition to a low carbon economy. And then it's our job as asset managers to hold these companies to account and to make sure that they have detailed, time-bound plans to move to a more sustainable path, and that we hold them to account. We speak to the companies and make sure that they are walking the walk in terms of sustainability. But I think it's good to just bear in mind that a lot of these big, you know, energy companies, for example, they have a lot of know-how in terms of managing big infrastructure projects, and often they have large capital reserves as well, and they can fund change. So when these companies decide to get behind being more sustainable and the transition to a large carbon economy, they can make a really big positive difference. So we're not looking to exclude these companies. We are looking to identify those companies within these sectors that have a genuinely more detailed plan in terms of how to move to a low carbon economy, how they're going to transition their business models. And then we are holding them to account in all our meetings to make sure that they are continuing to walk that walk. Because as I said, 2050 is a long way away, and we need to see progress well before that. But when you look at companies such as, I'm thinking of the Danish renewable offshore wind leader, Ørsted, it's now considered best in class from an ESG perspective. That wasn't always the case. It was in previous life, it was Dong Energy, which, you know, did invest in fossil fuels. But in its improver phase, when it was divesting of its fossil fuel businesses, its multiple increased exponentially from 10 to 30 when we look at its earnings multiple valuation. So I think these companies can be really attractive investments for clients, but obviously the devil is in the detail, and you need to invest in those companies within those sectors that are on the right path in terms of moving towards better sustainability.
Business of Weather, spotlighting the business opportunities of extreme weather and climate change. Right, that brings me nicely to my next question. I just want to take a look at the other side of the coin, so to speak. How are investments in companies which are actively engaged in sustainable activities, or activities which help to directly address the challenges of climate change, performing? Are such investments proving to be good investments?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, Ian. And I think the answer is yes, it's very much the case. You know, we believe that integrating ESG criteria and sustainability into the investment decision certainly adds value, both in terms of being able to deliver a better risk-adjusted return, but also in terms of improving along important ESG parameters, as I've said, for companies and society. But there's a lot of evidence to back up that, you know, ESG investing makes sense both from, you know, from a financial perspective, and that integrating ESG momentum, for example, into your investment process does improve risk-adjusted returns, which has been verified recently by the UNPRI. And also from recent findings from our own quantitative research team that shows that over the last 2 years, ESG has really become more financially material. So in other words, it's a source of outperformance, both in equity and in bond markets. And what we're seeing is that there's a huge flow of money from investors into ESG funds, and I think this is also a very positive backdrop for the asset class, and I do think it continues. When we look at Europe alone, we have increased fiscal support from the EU Green Deal, and we have financials that are increasingly aligning their lending, pension and insurance policies to factor in ESG considerations. And as I said before, consumers more than ever are looking to brands that share their ESG values, and it can really hit the share price when a negative ESG story comes out, which shows that a company is not embracing sustainability. And I'm not just speaking from an environmental perspective, it's also how they treat their workers, for example. And just to mention as well that I do think the more accommodative US president that we have now from an ESG perspective across a whole range of issues, I think is a tailwind for Europe as well, because a lot of these companies, big European companies, for example, that we might invest in, also have substantial US operations. So I think there's a lot of supportive factors for ESG investing at the moment. And I think if you have the right asset manager, you can generate alpha and at the same time have a positive impact on the world's sustainability.
Right, thanks. Now, many, many climate experts have made the case that if there's one thing that's required to tackle climate change, it's going to be innovation. So in your role as a fund manager, what do you do to encourage the formation of new business startups, which many people say are the most innovative businesses around, particularly startups focused on addressing the impacts of climate change? I appreciate that you probably have a limit in the size of the market cap you will go down to, and you probably have to invest into boutique funds. But how do you actually encourage investment in new and innovative businesses?
And I do think that it is very important. I mean, just as you kind of mentioned, my role as a portfolio manager at Amundi is focused on the large and the mid-cap space. You're talking about companies that are probably, you know, minimum market cap type 3-4 billion. So, but we do, you know, when we're speaking to companies and, you know, we're encouraging them to, you know, certainly on technologies that will have a positive impact on the planet rather than just avoiding emissions. And as I mentioned before, you know, companies that are showing innovation in areas, whether it's renewable diesel or green hydrogen, or chemical companies that are investing in technologies to develop feed, for example, that produces results in less methane emissions from cows, for example, or sustainable fish feed, for example, which, you know, will be positive from a biodiversity perspective. We're being kind of really kind of hunting for those companies that are really being different in terms of sustainability, in terms of looking at new areas to address kind of growing risks, not just on the obvious ones, which are to reduce your own direct environmental footprint. And I know Amundi as a whole does a lot of work with in this regard. As I said, it's not my primary area as a large cap, primarily large cap equity portfolio manager. But I do think it's something that Amundi as a whole really kind of stresses in our engagement with corporates, that we're looking for companies that have a net positive impact, that are not just looking to go to net zero, but looking to go beyond and actually have a positive impact on the environment.
Right. Now that brings us to my final question. Let's just take a look into the crystal ball. What do you believe are the major climate change related challenges which will face fund managers and your institutional and retail investment clients in the coming years?
Well, I think, you know, if I look forward, you know, ESG is a trend that's definitely here to stay. And as I said, there's increasing demand for ESG products. And with that comes, you know, a number of challenges for investors and asset managers. You have, you know, the ongoing planet environmental challenges and the threat of regulation that poses to companies that do not do the right thing from a sustainability perspective. So I think there's going to be penalties from companies that are not taking the right steps to reduce their environmental footprint from their own accord, and they'll be forced to then take those steps. And we're seeing a slew of regulation across all major nations, whether it's in the EU and also in the US now, and companies, and this really just, you know, forces those companies that haven't been more proactive to really get on board with addressing sustainability. And as I said, really, consumers are demanding that their brands resonate with their values. So really, it's going to hit the share price and the economic fortunes of those companies that are not part of the solution. But another risk to investors is to be able to identify the genuine ESG asset managers, because there is obviously a huge amount of greenwashing out there. A lot of asset managers that are trying to repackage themselves as responsible investors. And I think, as I said before, Amundi has been has put responsible investing at its core since its formation in 2010. So we view this as more of an opportunity for us to stand out from the crowd rather than a threat. But in terms of investors protecting themselves, I think there is regulation underway in Europe to help investors with this. We see the new SFDR regulations in Europe that are help investors to compare the market across Europe for the whole time, for the first time, to be able to understand asset managers' investment process, their track record, and also their level of ESG perspective. And Amundi scores very well in terms of the SFDR regulations. I think 2/3 of our funds are the highest rated from an SFDR perspective in terms of having a positive impact on the planet.
Well, that concludes today's interview. Suzanne Keane, Senior Portfolio Manager at Amundi, thank you very much.
Thank you for your time, Ian.
You've been listening to Business of Weather, the only podcast dedicated to the business opportunities of extreme weather and climate change.